This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast, episode 285, Wish. She cared too much. Hey there, Animation Addicts. I'm Morgan Stradling.
And I'm Chelsea Robson.
And we're back! It's been a while.
It has been quite the year.
That wasn't the intention, but
no,
life
wasn't.
Happens. And it's actually good to have a little break.
Yes.
Because then when you come back, you're really revitalized, regenerative. Regenerative, that's not a word. It's been a while. But
that's a verb.
I'm rejuvenated. Yes. I had a baby.
Oh, yay!
Yes, baby number four. And baby number four is quite the little terror. He loves his mom. He only wants mom. And mom is drained. Mom is tired. So, in case you're wondering where we've been, I'm literally drowning. Not literally.
You're not literally.
I have felt like I was drowning, and now it's getting better. My head is coming out of the water. I'm getting, somewhere.
Doggy
yeah, I'm doggy paddling now. Yes. So, enough about me. We will do an entire episode just catching up, talking about the industry and everything. But we are here to talk about Wish.
Yes, we are. And this has been, if you go back to our last episode, we did a preview of the year of that would
yes.
be coming. And now we have already passed all of them except for Wish. And so
there's a DreamWorks movie called Migration coming out in December.
Right.
So there's a few movies that came out that I want us to review later on.
Yeah.
Now, this isn't our, 2023 review.
We're not doing that.
But I'm not going to talk about some of these that were great, some that weren't. We'll get there. So,
but
subscribe.
I bring that up to say that, wow, here we are.
Yes.
We talked about it in our last episode about
yes.
this was basically the one of the ones that we knew we would end up seeing because it's the Disney film.
It is the Disney film. It's the highlight of a Disney animation fan's year, basically.
Yeah,
or every 2 years, if you're from the 90s or, in the 90s, they were doing it every year. But it's the moment. And so, luckily, the stars aligned. We made a wish and it happened. So we're here and we are talking about it. So we are straight from the theater. Chelsea and I saw a press screening for it and we're in the car. We have our mics and off we go.
Baby's in the back. So
yes, again, baby loves his mom. Baby had to come to the theater, was kind of a stinker. I had him in the carrier and was just basically down below near the bottom as you exit. And I was baby wearing him and he eventually, basically the last 5 minutes before the movie ended, he fell asleep. So he's sleeping in the car now. And so that's my story.
But
stick it to it.
Yes. This is going to be I don't know. Is this going to be fun? Well, Morgan and I are going to have fun.
Of course it'll be fun. It's a rotoscopers. Animation addicts episode. Always
so
fun.
Stick around after this little commercial and we will be right on it.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So I look up at the stars to guide me and throw caution to every warning sign. I'm sure there will be challenges that find me, but I can take them on one at a time. So
All right, a little background info for this movie in case you do not know about Wish. So Wish, take it away, Chelsea.
Wish was directed by Chris Buck and Fawn Vera... Okay, how do you say that?
Vera Sunthorn.
Vera Sunthorn.
Screenplay by Jennifer Lee and Allison Moore. It was produced by our good old Peter Delvecchio, Juan Pablo Reyes, Lancaster Jones. And
longest name I think I've ever seen.
It came out or will be coming out. Is this coming out before?
It comes out on the 22nd. So
November 22nd, 2023. Budget $200 million. And we'll have to see how much of it actually makes it back. Now, one thing to say, when we've been doing these, we're always like, oh, it made its budget back. Mm-hmm. We've always strictly just talked about like the straight budget that they tell us, mm-hmm. not including the marketing, right. which sometimes can be a second budget unto itself.
And we don't ever really...
And the theater fees, you know, that they... So really for some of these movies to actually break even, like we say like, oh, yay, it did 200. It was a flop. It did 200 million, but at least it made its budget back.
Like, no,
really,
it didn't.
Really, it's not. So we realize the error of our ways, but it's just so hard to calculate that in my mind, unless, you know, there are websites and stuff that will calculate that for you. But anyways, so 200 million is at least the minimum mark that we have to hit for this movie.
I think that just means four. I think it has to make at least $400 million in order to like
be a winner.
Yeah. And be like, hey,
at least half a million for this.
We made money.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that said, we have seen the movie. And going into this, Chelsea, were you excited for this? This is to commemorate. We haven't really talked about the Disney 100 year.
We will do an episode on that.
We will. There's so much to talk about. That's the great thing about this. I feel like I'm chomping at the bit to talk about all these various things. So I'm excited for that. But Disney 100 celebrating the 100th year of the Walt Disney Company. Mm-hmm. Put a pin in that for a future episode, okay? What a year this has been.
Yes.
And so as a result, they really timed this well, that this movie was going to be based on this concept that's iconic in Disney lore and Disney canon, Disney animated films, of wishing upon a star.
Mm-hmm.
The famous song from Pinocchio, "When you wish upon a star." So here we are. They decided, you know what? Let's make a movie about that.
Which can be
a great idea for a movie or a terrible idea for a movie, to be honest, right? It's all in the execution.
Going into this, was I excited? What was I? I really wasn't, honestly. I had low expectations based on the past years have just been subpar.
I will say it. Since Lasseter left, he was the COO of Disney, Disney and Pixar.
Uh-huh.
CCO, the chief creative officer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not COO. And he really was just this creative mastermind. And I've really come to appreciate the concept of don't fire your geniuses. And Disney has not been great at this. They buy out Lucasfilm and say goodbye, bye-bye now, bye-bye, bye-bye now to all. He had scripts for movie 7, 8, 9. And this isn't a Star Wars movie, but, you know, analysis. But and those movies sucked. In my mind, the Star Wars ends after 6.
Yeah.
Anything after that doesn't exist to me. And you just see these like creative geniuses. They really are so necessary to deliver great products. And I think Disney and Pixar, John Lasseter was that. And so even though John is Pixar guy, he had stepped in, starting with Meet the Robinsons, and really turned Disney around. And we've done the eras.
And those were great episodes.
I love those. Go back and listen to those because we hit every single... And eras are so trendy nowadays.
They really
are. We were doing it before anyone else was. But you go back and you listen to the different eras, and Disney always ebbs and flows.
Yes.
As is kind of expected, you know, with people and companies and whatnot. You have like good years and good seasons and then bad seasons and ups and downs. And because, like you, because Disney, the post-Lasseter era, as we call it, has been on the down... And then last year, Stranger Things. Oh, man. Strange World. I was not excited going into this. The promotion, the little teasers that I saw, just the concept was kind of like, what are we doing here, Disney? Okay. I'm hoping I can be blown away. Like Encanto. I went into Encanto like, really expecting nothing and was really blown away when I saw that in theaters.
You know, I was talking to, we made friends with the person next to us. She's a
Disneyland Instagrammer.
Yes. And it was quite fun to chat with her. And we were just talking about, nobody goes into a movie thinking, I want to waste 95 minutes of my life.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you have kids and you've dragged everyone.
Yes.
Especially as families. Let me tell you.
I don't want things to suck. I don't want to hate watch things. I'm not that kind of person.
No, we are Disney super fans.
Yes.
You know, even though we've maybe not soured on the company recently, we've maybe like woken up to just, you know, the reality of it. It's not everything rosy glasses. We can see both sides and we can see that they're in a down and we're going to acknowledge that.
Yes. And so anyway, I came in with not very high expectations. I will say, though, that based on other reviews and other things that people had said, like going into it,
there are some early reviews that are out.
I actually thought, you know what? The people who totally canned it, I don't think it was as bad as they were saying.
No, I agree.
But
there was one reviewer who said it was the worst Disney movie.
Yeah.
Of the entire canon. And this was from a Disney super fan. And I thought, worse than Chicken Little?
Worse? I mean, we really do have a scale here. Worse than the, oh gosh, what was the other one? The
Strange World?
No, yeah. Strange World.
Black Cauldron.
The Black Cauldron.
The Black Cauldron was always our go-to.
It's like, always the go-to baddie. Like, but you know, that Chicken Little and, you know, Strange World for me. But like, worse than those, I don't
know. No, not at all.
No. And I even felt like there were moments of this film that kids will enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like there were a lot of different different like punch lines that all the kids did laugh where you would think that they would laugh, like butt jokes and things like that.
The butt joke got quite the laugh.
It did.
Yes. As expected.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of moments where I feel like kids will, maybe if they see it young enough, they'll be like, that was kind of fun or that was interesting. But I will say, though, at the end, I felt a little offended.
Okay, hold it there. Let's talk about the very beginning, a very good place to start.
There we go. Let's start there.
So the premise of the film is there's a girl, Asha, and she lives in the Kingdom of Rosa. Mm-hmm. And this was an island nation that was founded by this king who became a sorcerer.
Magnifico.
King Magnifico.
In the Mediterranean Sea, which that was just weird.
Why did they even bother
giving it
like
a location?
Pinning it into a real life location. Everything about this was so just fantasy.
And diverse too.
Yes.
It's not like you had to like match clothing. Because a lot of these clothing, it was like this place for anybody to come,
yes.
A melting pot of sorts.
Yeah.
So why Mediterranean Sea?
Exactly.
I felt that was weird.
Yeah. That needed to just be cut. It just needed to be an imaginary fictional world
of
Rosa. And, you know, and basically, like you said, anyone can come to this
island.
Right
next to Genovia.
Yeah, exactly. And Arendelle. And so anyone can come, anyone. And then as part of kind of like the bargain that you make is that he's going to take your wish and be a steward of it and hold on to the wish. And since he's this grand, all-powerful sorcerer, that he can grant the wishes. But he doesn't grant everyone's wish because he's realized that some people don't really have that great of wishes. And that is a bad wish. You should not be wishing for that. And so he really ultimately makes the call on that. And every month there's kind of this wish festival. And I think that's weird to me. It shouldn't be, it just felt like, why monthly? You get together quite a bit. For such a grand thing, it should have been like a yearly thing. But I think they just didn't, once a month, there's one person who gets their wish granted. And then anyone who turns 18 then bestows their gift to him. And the gifts turn into these magical orbs that he then keeps him,
yeah,
you know, in his magical library.
So I'll give you my blatant what I felt like this movie really was.
Okay,
here's the thing: a lot of people that were going into it, they were giving it a lot of grief, saying that it's like, oh, they're trying to basically cut God out because God is the one that he's the one that decides who gets the wishes, and so that's bad, and everybody needs to get their wish, and so we need to be the people. That was kind of the vibe.
That was the vibe. Like people, the online, the YouTubers were talking about having not seen this simply from the premise. I did not feel that at all.
No, I didn't feel that at all. Honestly, I felt like the whole thing was just a cautionary tale. of the dangers of central planning
and socialism.
Yes,
exactly. That's really what I wrote down too. You know, so and there's even like a song where they mention it, where he's singing like your traditional villain song. And that's one thing I really do appreciate about this film.
That was a weird song, though.
It was No Be Prepared. Let me tell you.
Yes.
Put a pin in that. We got to talk about that in a bit. Okay, we'll talk about the songs in the song section. But even in one of the songs, I think it's his song, his villain song, he talks about, I provide you everything, food, clothing on your back, no rent.
Right.
And in return, you just have to give me your one little wish.
Right, right.
And immediately red flags are going off in my head. You know, it's like the idea of like, I'll provide you everything, but you just have to sacrifice this little bit of freedom. Because at the very beginning, they really hit you home, hit it over your head that like this wish is like your essence, your everything. Like you can't be interested in multiple things or have all these desires. It's like all culminated into this one wish orb essence that like is everything to you. And another thing about this is when you give up the wish, you forget about the wish. Like you lose all memory of the wish.
You have a frontal lobotomy.
Yeah. Which is like
return for safety.
Yes. So weird.
It's weird. But I mean, that is, you know, if you're looking at, if you've read a history book about communism and most of the cultures that end up going straight into communism, like that's basically what you're looking at, is everybody becomes a cog in the wheel and you can't have a dream. You can't, because your dream can't be better than somebody else's dream and somebody else's thing. Like you can't be starting riots and starting riots.
End up in the electric chair.
Like, if you've read any of these things, you've seen it. It's just,
go check out our Animal Farm episode.
Yes, please do. That was fantastic. But I felt like that's what we were watching. But the thing that I didn't like is that it didn't feel like that was what the directors or writers wanted you to feel. Like, they didn't know what they were actually writing, because later on in the story, it just like turns into this like rebellion thing of like, now we're awakened by, now that we know too much about what's going on. Like that song. What was that song?
The cheesy rebellion song, basically. Yes. It was way too on the nose.
Yeah.
You know, she basically, I'm going to call her princess because Disney heroines, we just call Disney princesses. It's the brand. But Asha, she basically becomes this activist princess because of what happens to her in the film and how she kind of realizes the truth.
Knowing what I know now.
Yes, exactly. Knowing what, like, so on the nose.
And it's just weird how it was like a communal thing of like, now we're all going to rise up. Like it was, just, it felt like citizens of the world unite. We're going against our
I'm not saying there's anything wrong. Like when you realize that there is corruption and things need to be made a change.
When there's central planning, it should be dissolved.
Yes. But the way it went about it, so one thing about this movie is it was so fast.
Yeah.
Everything was so quick. You're just like thrown into the main action. You're thrown into the main character and like, oh, and here's her gang of friends. And oh, she wants to be an apprentice to the magician.
So many people.
And
so
she
many
has,
characters.
And she has a job interview that's happening today. And so here, go. The job interview is happening now. Mm-hmm. Oh, the job interview is over. But hey, you can sit next to the queen. And it's just like moves. And it's, I really felt, okay, so she wants to be the sorcerer's apprentice. And in this movie, because it's the 100th anniversary of Disney, Easter eggs are all throughout this thing.
Yeah.
And the sorcerer's apprentice obviously is a reference to Fantasia and Sorcerer Mickey from that. And so I thought that was kind of cool. I was like, oh, that's cool. But like the way it was done was just so rushed. Like I was watching it and she was there talking to her family. And then she's talking to her friends. Next thing I know, she's in this job interview. And I'm like, whoa, what's happening? And
well, no, first thing, like this random I'm a tour guide song. Which did not do anything for me.
Yeah, it was very the family Madrigal.
Yes.
That it was like, hey, that worked in
Welcome to Rosas.
Yeah, well, that welcomed in Encanto, and that really set the stage. Let's do it again. And it was like really weird because you get this like quirkiness with Asha.
Yes.
And Asha is just like this terrible mix of Rapunzel and Mirabelle.
Yeah.
And every and a little Anna. Like every quirky adorkable princess yes. that we've had over the past decade is really tiresome now.
Yes.
Like, can we just have someone serious like Tiana, mm-hmm. who was like, had a dream and she wasn't goofy and she worked hard for what she wanted. And you love her for that. Like, you really understand who she is, but she's just like so goofy.
Yeah.
That's too much.
Yeah.
And you're like hit over the head with it at the beginning. Like, hey, this is me. It's my personality. And it goes away as we progress and the story gets a little bit more serious, but I did not like that at all.
So one thing that I felt was really missing through the whole story was the fact that there's in story writing there, you have a main character mm-hmm. who has a misbelief mm-hmm. and somehow through overcoming that misbelief, they're about themselves, about the world.
Yeah. The hero's journey.
It's the hero's journey. You're able to, as a viewer, able to relate to this person mm-hmm. of being like, yes, I've had that misbelief maybe in the past and I have overcome that mm-hmm. flaw in myself.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what it's supposed to be.
Or even if you haven't had that, you can appreciate the growth that they're going through.
Yeah. You can see why she cared mm-hmm. and why this meant something to her mm-hmm. as opposed to just being, this is for everyone. This is for all of my family. Okay. But I don't.
Well, no, they. So she goes to this job.
It just made it discombobulated.
No, she goes in this job interview where she's going to be meeting with the king and, you know, see if he's a good fit. She's a good fit for the apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. And her friend's like, okay, let's do like a mock interview. What is your fatal flaw? This is like a classic trope in job interviewing right. is they're going to ask you like, what's your weakness?
Yeah.
And then there's the other trope where people don't want to admit that they have any weaknesses.
Yeah.
So instead they say something that's like a strength and they're like, I just work too much. and hers was no joke. They literally say this. I care too much.
Right.
And she says that in the mock interview. And then again, she says it to the king. And I'm like, and it's like they're hitting us over the head with this is her weakness. Don't you get it? Like
yeah.
she cares too much yes. for everyone. But she hadn't at that point proven. Like it's
right.
say, if do, don't say. She yeah. hadn't proven that she cared for the people or that she was this, like that this meant everything to her,
right.
or that she would give anything for any of the members of the society.
Right.
And so, but hers is like, I just care too much. And she continues with that. And we're supposed to believe that's her fatal flaw, but it's almost like a joke to me because of the way that it's presented.
I agree.
With her literally saying like, that's my weakness. Isn't that funny? And for
yeah.
that reason, and like you're going, I imagine you're going to say she doesn't overcome anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like by caring too much, did that get her into trouble at some point in the movie? And she lost it all, or, you know, she's in chains, or, you know, like, you know, Aladdin at the bottom of the ocean.
Right,
like,
exactly.
You know, no, she doesn't have
no.
a moment like that at all.
And the whole, and even at the very end, her main moment of like, I'm just going to sing. You are all stars. I just
like,
oh,
very
my
collective.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't get over that. Like
there's so much.
There's so much. First off, let's just say how forgettable the songs were.
Go into the music.
All.
Yes, they're terrible.
Like, okay, so you have the first one was Welcome to Rosas, which was
we talked about.
I cannot remember a single bit of that song.
I don't remember anything of the song. I just remember it's very much trying to be Familia Madrigal, and mm-hmm. she's just goofy, and she's dancing all over the place, and mm-hmm. she's like a rag doll. Her head's
yeah,
this way and
yeah.
that way, and flopping, and this, and doing all these crazy poses. It's way over the top. It's too much. And I'm
the
like,
squatch and stretch was
yes. She's introducing like new people who floated on their boat over here, and she's like, welcome, you know. And if I were one of those people, I'd be like, get me back on that boat. I am good. I'm getting out of here. If this is your ambassador,
she's,
I understand it's an animated movie, but.
That's a no for me, dog. But that was the thing about the art direction in this movie. It was not good. I'm saying like the angles mm-hmm. of the camera. Mm-hmm. And I saw somebody pointed this out in another review. And I was watching for it and I realized, no, it's completely true. Every character, for the most, like there are very few points in time where any character was to the right or to the left as in a third.
To give some like visual interest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And every character was always
straight in the middle
of the frame. And I watched it and I was like, no, yes, That is exactly what's happening through the entire thing. And so you don't have very much visual intrigue happening.
To like look around and see.
Right. And it also made it like jarring. I liked seeing some of the watercolor stuff, the texture, but it just also was weird. It was jarring.
Well, okay. So here's the thing. You're obviously building on the legacy of the Walt Disney Company and Walt himself and Snow White and some of those early films being so iconic with their watercolor backgrounds. Bambi, you know, is bringing to mind and Snow White, and they're beautiful and they're stunning and they just work with the 2D form.
Yeah.
And there's an interview that Jennifer Lee did, which we are going to save for its own episode because there's so much to talk about there. But she basically says, like, hey, we were considering doing 2D, but ultimately decided not on it. And it's like they couldn't pick a lane.
Mm-hmm.
They had feet in two boats. It's like, we're trying to pay homage in so many ways. So let's do the watercolor background and let's kind of make it look like it's a moving watercolor.
Mm-hmm.
But with the old films, the 2D characters were never watercolor. It was the background and then the cel shaded characters, which were great. And they just blended so well, even though they were different. And in this, and then we'll come back to the music, but since we're talking about the art, with this, they have these watercolor-esque backgrounds, but they didn't really look watercolor to me. They did at certain points, but then when they're up close, they kind of, they're this like, there's like this blur on them that's kind of weird. They were kind of distracting at certain points. And then you have the characters who are clearly CGI models and they've put kind of a paper man effect over them, but different in to make them appear like they're a 2D
paper
character.
Man worked and this one didn't.
Yeah. They tried to make it appear like they were a 2D character, but then because they are a CGI character and they just have so much more movement, I guess, like, because you don't have to animate every single, you know, you don't have the limitations in the number of frames that you can do. They move very like too fluidly. It reminded me of when you leave your like when you buy a new TV out of the box and you set it up, always they have this stupid motion blur setting on, which gives you the soap opera effect.
Yes.
You know, soap operas are filmed in this high frame rate, which makes them just like look too smooth and like, if you've ever seen a soap opera, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And that's what this effect does. It, let's say if your film is in 24 frames per second, what motion blur does is it creates new frames in between the frames to blur it and to make it even smoother. The idea is that like for sports and stuff that it just makes it even more like realistic. But when you're watching movies and you know this isn't the way that it was filmed, and if I were a director of any of these movies or TV shows, I'd be totally pissed because I'm like, you are destroying my film. And I think so many people don't even know that this is a thing because people turn it on like and they just leave it. And it is one of my biggest pet peeves. Whenever I go to someone's house and it's on, I literally go into the settings and I turn this off. I'm like, you do not need to be watching this garbage. And that's me a long roundabout way saying that that's what this felt like. It felt like because they have the watercolor style and then a CGI model, but then has this facade over it to make them look like they're a 2D character.
Yeah.
Like it was very flat and the colors, and even they'd have like lines on their, like their jawline or their nose to indicate like, this is where a pencil would have drawn the nose,
right?
Instead of seeing like the full 3D effect of a nose or a chin or a jawline. Right. And so they do that. And because the underlying bones of the character is CGI, and they left like more frames than you would expect. I felt like they needed to cut frames out.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you were going to do this, like only allow 24 frames.
Yeah.
And don't make them so smooth and don't make them just so computery. Like,
yeah,
it threw me off many times in the film when they'd be moving or talking. And I'm like, what? Like, this doesn't even look right.
Yeah.
I was so thrown off.
I was like that through a lot of the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, why do I not like?
Like, my eyes are not, it's uncanny valley.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I bring that up just to be like, that just made it all, especially when it goes into this song of Welcome to Rosa's. It's just like every bit of this felt weird and felt overdone and just, I wasn't sure what
like
was happening.
Alien-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, another thing with the art style is like, then sometimes they would, like a character, they'd do a pan out and then you would see that character like in the background or further in the scene, further back in the scene. And then they'd be even more of this like watercolor wash over them and it like blurry in a way. And it really just threw me out because you'd be like them up close and you'd see Asha's hair and you could see like every strand right. of her hair. And then she'd be far back and or they're they were struggling with making it cohesive.
Yeah.
In so many ways. We're mm-hmm. just talking about the art right now. We're not even talking about the story. Yeah. Let's talk about the music.
So the next one is the At All Costs, and that is with Chris Pine and Asha's character, DeBose is the last name. And that one was the one where they're in his laboratory or his where they're looking at all the wishes. And at first, they're
it's like
on the
a duet
same...
between mm-hmm. him and her. Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, okay, I don't know. All of these songs, once again, I cannot tell you any bit of the melody. I can't, I just.
And sometimes it does take a few listenings to make a song stand out. But like, you know a good song when you hear it because you want to listen to it again.
I remembered Let It Go months later, Morgan.
Yes, that's true.
So there's a difference. The next one is This Wish, and that's
this is the one that that's been in the trailers.
I've heard it enough that I'm like, okay, that one. And that one wasn't bad.
That one's okay.
Yeah, that one's fine. But once again, it goes back to the star. Like, I'm a star. I felt like that song was one of those generic songs that they put in Fantasmic. That sounds like a Disney song, but you'll never remember this one.
Yes. Yes. Like the special fireworks, you know, show that they put on for a few years and they write just a few new bops,
new
right?
Little ditties. And,
yeah.
And they all have a little bit of the R&B remix to it, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I felt like. I was like, this is not a real song. This is one of those songs that are just kind of.
Yeah, and it's like
it'll be out of the park.
Okay, we gotta do our Ajinou, you know, I Want song because we've established at this point if we're gonna do a musical. We gotta have one of those. Do we?
But I mean, that's what the All Cost is. But yeah, there never really was this is my wish kind of song.
No, it's the wish that song.
Yeah, This Wish. Okay,
This Wish is her wish. Yeah,
yeah, but it was too far. It was too far into the movie to really catch you as being like, I feel this girl. I feel like you just did not understand.
I don't think that's not a matter of the song. I think that's a matter of her lack of character development.
Yeah.
She was pretty one-sided. It was like, I just want the wishes. I just want mm-hmm. everyone to have their wishes. You know, she comes to this realization in the movie that he's not going to grant everyone's wish. Mm-hmm. And she didn't realize that at that point in time. Like we do, because they have the classic storybook, mm-hmm. Disney storybook, where they open it up and they do the prologue and it's fine. You know, nothing really stands out. And then you like jump into her crazy song.
You're right. She didn't have a very good character development through the first half. Mm-hmm. And it was about halfway through that that song comes around.
Yeah.
Where she's like, oh, me and my dad used to sit on the tree and watch the stars.
And then it was like, okay, cool. So your dad died.
Yeah. What was that?
Yeah. And
you didn't bring that in at all.
His dad's alive. So the grandpa on her dad's side is alive. Mm-hmm. And then her mom is alive. So it was just kind of an interesting dynamic. I kind of liked that. But they just like introduced the dad. But the dad just died. Like, just because he didn't sacrifice himself for anything. Like, maybe it would have been cool.
Well, no, because they were like, oh, that's not fair. Is it? It's not like
that was so dumb.
That was really dumb. Like, because the whole thing was they were trying to be like, oh, it isn't fair that we don't get what we want. And to watch a dream die, no one should have to feel that kind of sorrow. No one should have to feel that. And it's kind of like, those are lessons that we should all learn.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So I didn't know if that was are you trying to make that the misdirection or are you trying, like, I don't. No, that's the thing with a lot of these movies right now is you have a lot of messages that I'm like, I don't know if you're serious or not. Because mm-hmm. sometimes they end up being serious. Like, no, everyone should get everything they ever wanted and
right,
more.
Right, right, right. Exactly. Whoa. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. You know, I think of Tiana and, you know, hey, since they wanted to reference every single Disney movie ever,
right.
I will too, you know, and I'm going to hold them to the standard.
Yes.
And with Tiana's case, you know, she had this dad that sacrificed himself or just like worked so hard for the family, and she never really saw him, and then mm-hmm. he died, you know? Yeah. And I felt that sacrifice, even yeah. though he didn't die for the cause, if you will, but he was working, and then he died, and it was tragic. And now she's like continuing on because she wants to make him proud. And with this, it's like, oh, we got, she has to have a tragic backstory with the dad who died. It was like, oh, your dad's dead. Okay, cool. Like,
yeah.
It, really, it was like nothing. It meant nothing to me.
Right.
Except for there's this tree that to me kind of felt like, especially because this is the tree where she and her dad, when she was little, would like sit and they'd look at the stars.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes in her big moment, she sings and then gets onto the very tip of the branch of the tree. And it very reminded me of Jack's lament from Nightmare Before Christmas, which I know is not officially Disney canon, but you know, that like
right.
swirly mountain hill yeah. thing that he, like, that's what I felt like when I saw him,
that's right.
saw her standing on that. But yeah,
it was just, I felt like there was just, I don't know.
Okay, next song.
The next song. So we have This Is the Thanks I Get, the villain
okay.
song.
Pathetic.
Really was.
Like, that's your
really
big
was.
Thing that you're mad at, is that, like, he didn't get any thanks for what he had done? Is that kind of, like, the vibe that you've gotten for it?
Yeah, like, okay, so you're just a narcissist. Like, that's...
Which is fine.
Yeah,
for
okay.
A
but it's like, I don't understand, like, what...
Like, what's the driving force
there
for that?
There was no driving force, because if you were looking at his driving force, okay, I look at, if you're looking at Les Miserables mm-hmm, and you have mm-hmm. the stars, where he's like, by the stars, I will continue
with my... make justice happen.
Right.
Yeah.
And if for him, he said, I don't want people to have to go through the type of loss that I went through, as... He looked up because he's got this tapestry that has his family story on it, which yeah. is weird.
But and they don't go into it.
No, they don't go
like,
into it. Really
I kept thinking about it. I was
just
like
he got a boat crashed and he was like, wah, wah, at the very beginning, you know?
Well, yeah, I kept thinking in my mind. I was like, wait, did I miss something like really important and tragic that happened?
It really didn't show anything.
It was kind of in the prologue, but it was like, oh, big whoop, like, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought that tapestry was going to come back around.
Yeah.
And like, oh, we're going to have the missing part of the tapestry. And it's going to show the other side of the history of what really happened.
Right.
You know what I mean? Kind of. No, no. It was just, this is the relic from my bad experience. And
but he didn't, that was not in the villain song.
The song was just him being mad about the people.
Right.
And he needed... stronger driving force motivation for mm-hmm. why he was bad, because I appreciate that they brought us back to a classical bad Disney mm-hmm. villain. But going back and thinking about bad Disney villains, I mean, at the very beginning they're like, oh, he's our king, we love him, you know,
mm-hmm.
and we appreciate him, and very quickly he turns bad, and we don't really know why. And so I'm thinking of other Disney villains. I'm thinking of Scar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Scar is the scorned brother. So from the very beginning, we already have, like, there's some beef here.
I was first
he's
in line.
Yeah, he's the second
the
in line.
Was born.
Yeah, now he's, you know,
the
third in line.
The easiest way to get, like, yeah, I get your motivation.
Yes, he doesn't show up at the wedding or mm-hmm. at the christening, or, you know,
yeah.
the basically the...
Presentation
of the new son. And then he talks to... Simba about it, and we
yeah.
hear, you know, more of these little quips that he has, and more of his motivation, and then we see that he sends his henchmen, and like it
mm-hmm.
builds
mm-hmm.
for him to be, you know, he just keeps building on being a villain. There's like
mm-hmm.
little tiny things that he does, mentioning the elephant graveyard
mm-hmm.
which is bad to do, you know. It just, he builds and builds, and then we get be prepared
yes.
where he's gonna take over, and Jafar, you know, mm-hmm. you think of Jafar and how he was like the vizier, and you know, he was okay at the beginning, and there's like these little subtle things that he did. And I didn't really get any of these subtle character moments
mm-hmm.
that culminated in the need
well,
for
a
song.
He wasn't a believer in his actual motive as what he would tell people.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you were to really take it and be like, no, this guy actually believes that if everybody got their stuff, then the whole
yeah.
world would, you know, crumble.
We needed an example of how someone having gotten their wish, maybe someone
yeah.
close to him got their number one wish,
and it was bad for the whole group.
For the whole, yeah, or him, or
uh-huh.
or like destroyed his city,
right,
or his family, or he was an orphan as a result of it.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Like, it, we needed to see how why he is the way that he is, and mm-hmm. why he's kind of hoarding these and being very selective in who gets their wish. Mm-hmm. And we didn't. He just did because he's like, I choose. I ultimately get to say. And I didn't like it. It just didn't work. So
yeah. And then you have his wife, who's been so loyal through the whole thing.
And the wife is the worst.
She's terrible.
Okay, she's so dumb. One, I do not appreciate her. Mireille. Like, every time she calls, like, anytime she enters a room, Mireille, which means my king. Mireille, Mireille. Which, I'm fine with the Spanish, whatever. But it was just so...
In the Mediterranean Sea.
Yeah, subservient to me. I mean, Spain's down there.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
I wish they just would have gone all in on just like one unique style and culture instead mm-hmm. of this like mishmash of everything. And that was the whole point, that people from all lands could come. But it was weird to me because diversity is our strength, as they say. It was too disjointed. Mm-hmm. I felt like it was very distracting at mm-hmm. times. Unique culture. And that's not to say that multiculturalism is bad, but just in this instance, I just didn't feel that it worked.
Well, there was just so many characters in general.
Well, characters that you didn't care about.
Yeah.
Like
all of her friends.
Her friends was like the BK Kids Club of the 90s.
Yeah.
It really was, yeah. You know, and like literally like back then they had the guy in the wheelchair, right?
Uh-huh.
And she had the disabled friend who had
right.
the crutch, you know, because and I feel like this, I'm pointing at you, the Academy Awards,
yes.
where they have this now. To be qualified for an Academy Award, you have to have a certain percentage of diversity and these characters.
Right.
And if they're not in your movie, then they have to be on like the production team.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels so forced now. I feel like every movie from Disney just has this like cast of characters, like
yeah.
one from every country sort of thing, like Captain Planet, where they all feel like this like hodgepodge Disney multiculturalism in every single movie,
right.
And it's getting kind of tiresome. I know they're trying to swing to include everyone, but you can't include everyone.
I just feel like the queen, like okay.
Oh, okay, the queen. Yes, okay, the queen. The queen was the biggest NPC I've ever
yes.
had.
That is the
right
the phrase.
So she comes up and they. Oh, I'm the king, and this is in the prologue. And then I have my queen, and I'm like, mm-hmm. okay.
She's so loyal and fair.
Like, yeah. And so we don't meet her in, like, the storybook. She just, like, appears. Like, oh, I met my wife, and she's my queen now. And then she's just, like, the queen who's just by his side, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't even get, like, a sense of their relationship
no.
at all. She was just, like, the stoic Mireille, Mireille. And
right.
just kind of a yes man in a way. But I didn't even feel like they loved each other. And at the very beginning of the film, he has like brown hair, and years, decades have gone by, and now he has gray hair. So obviously they've been together.
Which I'll be honest, I mean, he was a silver fox.
He was great.
Yeah.
His design, he was like the silver fox version of Eugene.
Yeah.
A Flynn Rider.
Yeah, yeah.
He was very attractive. And that was like kind of his thing with the narcissist.
Right.
That he was like so attractive and he knew it. But I feel like at that point, you're married 20 plus years. Like you, when you're in a relationship like that, you kind of become one, and you have not similar ideas. Like, obviously, you have your own interests and whatnot, but
mm-hmm.
you really, like, work as one force and kind of think the same way and, like, are working towards things. And I just feel...
And she said that. She's like, I've helped you build this whole thing. This has been my whole thing.
But I didn't believe it from her.
Of course
because
not.
Of her actions. I didn't feel like she was invested. Like, I feel like she should have been, like, bad, too.
Yeah.
She because they've been together so long, even though she wasn't necessarily a bad person, just because of what they
she
did.
She should have been a true believer.
She knew everything that he had done.
Yes.
It was no secret. And so she should have been a true believer and like been all in. And that way, when she flipped, it would have meant something because
mm-hmm.
it was honestly like NPC, like dialogue that's like meant to have where like
mm-hmm.
it's like the set, like, you know, NPC, if you don't know, is non-playable character in a video game where you go up to them. And they might have a point, you know, in the storyline, but like you don't play them. They just have like their same
yeah.
word bubble that they say,
mm-hmm.
you know, and NPC is just an internet term for someone who's just like not really
a
main character, not really there. Right. Like they just are, you know, and that's what she was. And then, you know, there was the one point where it like flips and then she's, which was so dumb because the friends
they
are having
whatever the story needs
them
to be.
They're having their like. Their revolution song, which
yes,
is like
that
I do 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 do,
which is so much better of a song
for sure. And from Les Mis, and she just opens the door and like and sings along with them, like, "I'm with you. I'm turning on the king." And we're like, "What?
Yeah.
Like, what? When?" Like, there were like a few moments where she was like questioning him, but it was just so passive, so lame. The mouse, if a mouse crawled on you, you would freaking stand up and scream.
I'm very clean.
No, you okay. would. I no, even if it was talking to you, you would freak out.
Oh,
you,
yeah.
You would be frightened.
Oh, yes.
Unless, and they didn't establish that it's like a dirty place where mice run everywhere and climb on you. And like, that was so dumb.
Well,
I did not I like, mean, maybe a parrot. They should have had a parrot, at least a bird. You're like, cool. Sweet.
Yeah. Nice.
If a parrot came in this podcast and flew on my shoulder, I'd be like, Chelsea. A parrot, you know what I mean?
Right,
like, that's
right.
Something that you want to land on you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay, the singing flowers in a Disney movie. You know, you just had all
that
of these.
That was to reference the mm-hmm. the old shorts.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Alice in Wonderland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, you just have, but, oh gosh, the other NPC, which is like, it was just, you know, okay, of her friends, the only two friends that really did or meant anything was the baker friend with
yes.
the
crook with the glasses and the Tiny
crutch.
Tim crutch.
Yes, the Tiny Tim crutch. And then the guy who had already turned 18 and had lost all will to live.
Yes.
Yes. And he was just like the fact that when he got his wish because he wanted to be the
best knight in all the land.
Yeah, and
the most loyal.
Uh-huh. And he's like, because I just wanted to believe in him so bad. Like, it was just such a weird, like.
Well, yeah. So,
I don't know.
He puts this big reward for anyone who. So, we totally didn't even talk about this part.
Yeah.
But she makes this wish. And actually, a wish comes true. And it comes true in the form of a literal star that looks like they yoinked it.
A very cute star.
It looks like they yoinked it from Super Mario Odyssey.
Yes.
If you ever played that game, there's like this little star that Rosalina has. Like, honestly, they're like, oh, this is too cute, we need a copy. And so they did. And so, but this star kind like makes wishes come true, but really only for the animals, if you notice. Like,
yeah.
no human, like
what
a selfish little guy, like didn't really do anything that actually mattered to give someone a wish. It was just like, you're an animal, I'll just make you talk, because clearly that's all you guys want is just the ability to talk.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so the star is like around, and it created this like cosmos disruption in the magic.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what sets him off. And it, again, I didn't really love that, because I'm like, well, why? Like, why does this matter? It was really just that his regime was threatened.
Yeah.
Basically. And he didn't appreciate
if
that.
If he were a true believer in his regime, then I would have felt like, okay, yeah, I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't a true believer in what he wanted or what he was. His motives, like, mm-hmm. as far as he didn't have a reason of like, oh my gosh, my kingdom is truly at risk, or
everything that I've sacrificed for.
Right.
Yes.
Or if they would have just gone doubled down on the fact that this guy is just an authoritarian and he just wants it his way.
Right.
Which, okay, you know,
yeah.
There's people who are like that. But so when the star comes, and now he's like,
which is just named Star.
Yeah.
They just call him Star. I'm like, can we not call him Starry? Or like something cute? Something like
he's
so
very cute.
It, like, literally the name of the star being Star just shows how just generic and no thought went into this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the thing is, so anyway, going back to the friend who ends up selling her out because he feels like he's like, okay, so the king comes up and Magnifico comes up and he says, if anybody helps me, I will grant your wish. Mm-hmm. If you don't help me, then you will never get your wish.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is the only one of his friends who's had it, and he's lost his all will to live. And he's just like, oh, it's so sad. But he's like, oh my gosh, I must do this now. And so he rats her out. And like, so anyway.
But that's, again, it just happened so fast. And
yeah.
That was another thing that bothered me. Like, there was no suspense as to who mm-hmm. this person was. He's like, a traitor has come for, or no, so there's a traitor here, you
mm-hmm.
know, whatever. And then like someone has come in, and we're like, oh, who could it be? And obviously there's only about six people who
yeah.
know her secret. So, but there were no hints. There were no,
well,
at least for me,
you did get a hint as far as like, you saw him go, I'll get my wish. What? Because he was just so inside.
Yeah.
But I feel like, so he was, later on they have, Magnifico ends up using him as a decoy, like makes him look like himself and is chasing Asha. And there's a point in time where he turns back into himself and he's under his spell, like, I, Magnifico, never would have put, you know, he always knows what's going on or whatever. And he is going after her. And then all of a sudden you have the bear, random bear necessities comes in. And
I thought it was Little John. Wasn't his name John? It was supposed to reference
John?
Yeah, name was John. He's supposed to reference John from Robin Hood. And he, as in one of the scenes earlier, he's like, hey, Bambi. And Bambi, and it was a deer. And at that point, they had turned away. And then immediately the scene ends. And I hadn't paid attention enough to see if the model of that deer actually looked like adult deer Bambi.
It didn't.
It probably, oh, it didn't. Okay. It's been lame. Okay.
I mean, it looked like a deer, you know, but it didn't. Like, adult deer Bambi was just a different style, you know, and these were all kind of similar. But anyway, the point was, is it's the Deus Ex Machina where it's just some random thing jumps out and like saves the day. And then it just, so that's another point in time where Asha does not have to develop any kind of strength in order to overcome one of her weaknesses. Somebody else comes in and knocks it out for her. Mm-hmm, so it's just another bit of character development lost in that moment. And you just have this poor kid who's now, you know, being threatened by a whole bunch of bunnies.
Yeah. Going back to her character development, you know, it was just funny to me. The whole setup for this, it's like, oh, you want to be the Sorcerer's Apprentice. Mm-hmm. And, oh, you happen to have an interview today. Like it would have, and then, oh, wow, she's in the interview and it doesn't go very well. But to me, it would have made a lot more sense if they would have done Mulan style matchmaker, where we see, okay, obviously there's other applicants, but we don't see those other people.
We just see the one.
We don't really see what she's up against. Like, wow, this is like great competition. You don't even stand a chance, but it doesn't matter. This is my dream. This is my wish. I'm going to make it happen. Like, we don't even really build her wish and how it's torn away from her. It's really just a plot device so we can see the magical wish room and then for her to have her moment of like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, and
this
I would have liked to see like all the applicants together and her like stressing it out because like, oh my gosh, I know him. He's so talented. He knows this. And like, and then he goes in and does the interview. And also what really bothered me, he's like, all right, this is our interview, blah, blah, blah. And then, oh, well, this is my special, sacred, super important room where very few people have ever been in. But I trust you enough in this job interview. And I'm like, no, you don't. This is so dumb. This is something that you would not show someone until they're actually your apprentice. So it just seemed like a convenient thing that they just like, yada, yada. It didn't even make sense because if he said it's so important, so special, they shouldn't have included that line at all because he would not show it to her.
Yeah. Let me go back to the queen at the end.
Okay.
So the queen at the end, she...
Also, the queen, can I just say, like, is it weird that the castle is so accessible?
Yeah.
There's obviously, like, the castle part, and then the one girl works there, and then there's, like, the outer castle courtyard where, like, all the peasants live. And it just seems like conveniently whenever they needed it, they were close to a room in the castle that they could just walk up and get to where they needed. Like, there was no, like,
she's the cook, so she has the one secret passage.
I know, but I don't know. Like, it was just too convenient, right? Yeah. Like, well, that was the secret passage to get to the study, but even getting in, I don't know. It would have been, I didn't like it. I felt like there needed to be more of a quest to get inside the castle. Because
no fear.
Yeah, they were just in. They were just there. And, like, then they were talking to the queen. And, like, the royalty was too accessible in this film for me.
The whole thing, the queen at the end, and she just changes so quickly from the man I loved, the man I was following, and now she's besties with this little group of kids. And it's just, it's really weird. Like, there's one point in time where in one of the last frames, everyone's celebrating and she goes over and is like trying to celebrate with them. And it's just like, that's such a weird thing.
It was
dumb. She just went from this man that she's loved and devoted mm-hmm. to 20 years, helped build
totally
this whole
thing.
Totally
turned on a dime.
Yeah, and has absolutely no remorse or regret or...
There wasn't really any particular thing that he did to her either yeah. that really should have...
And she was like, put him in the basement or the
yeah, hang
dungeon.
Him up in the dungeon. And like, no remorse.
What?
And he gets the, you know... The Disney, I heard that like a classic Disney death. So immediately your mind goes to falling off a cliff, which I was yeah. like, yes, let's do it. And he gets the Jafar treatment yeah. where he gets kind of like itty bitty libby space. Uh-huh, and uh-huh. it's like, okay, like fine.
Yeah. Or I guess he's the man in the mirror now.
Yeah.
Because that's what they're yeah. trying to do. All of these things, it kind of. How this is how all of the Disney movies actually like, fit together like in the same universe.
Yeah.
And this is the essence of how it all started.
Here are all the Easter eggs that I found. There's a wishing well, which mm-hmm. were from Snow White, the Sorcerer's Apprentice, Aurora's dress. Someone's like a dress has a dressmaker dream and mm-hmm. they're making the blue dress, which I appreciated.
Make it pink.
There's Bambi, Little John. There's the poison apple with like the poison literally like bubbling over mm-hmm. when he's in his like laboratory. He gets stuck in the lamp. There's a part where she has a magic wand and she's tapping it, sort of like the fairy godmother's mm-hmm. like tapping, like, is this thing on? Is this thing working? She like taps it a funny way to get it to like work.
Yeah.
Which was cute. There's the Jack's Lament, you know, spiral mountain, which isn't Disney, but it is Disney. So there's Mickey fireworks at the end mm-hmm. over the castle.
The quill does like a...
The quill does the Disney Channel wand yes. thing where it makes like the Disney hat sort of, which is funny.
The ears.
Their kind of island that they live on is reminiscent of me to like Rapunzel's little island uh-huh. that is, I don't know if it's an island or whatever, covered by majority water, if not
There's
all.
There's one line where the Magnifico is like, quotes the evil witch in yeah. Little Mermaid. Mm-hmm. It's like,
true love when she's all big and uh-huh. monstrous.
So much for true
so
love.
Much. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like there's a lot of those things that they're throwing in there.
There's going to be so many Easter eggs. Mm-hmm. Like get ready for the YouTube videos on yeah. this.
I was fine and happy with many of them, but it was at the very end when they basically say the Aja is now the fairy godmother, which is just like, okay, and this is this... It's just
the premise is just weird because it's like she's going to be the Sorcerer's Apprentice, but we don't see her doing anything really magic-y.
Yeah.
Like, where does this magic come from? Like, why are you qualified to be like an apprentice? And but then anyway, so he gets this book that's this like oh, yeah. evil.
We really are bouncing off.
No, I mean, this is our this yeah. is how it is. We just saw it. And so we're just thinking of these all these things as they come. But. I mean, that's where he like takes his turn to the dark side. There's mm-hmm. this magical book that he had come across and it has the forbidden spells.
Yeah. The forbidden odds.
You know, very reminiscent, I guess, of the Snow White and her book mm-hmm. of spells. And he just, because obviously his villain song, he gets so mad that he decides I need to turn to this.
Yeah.
To
take over.
Take over. Yeah. yeah. So.
Okay. I mentioned at the very beginning that I was offended.
Oh.
And here's why. At the very end, when they have her do the Cinderella, the wand kind of goes around. The star goes around her and acts like the fairy godmother's wand mm-hmm. when Cinderella does, like, gets turned into the pretty dress.
Yeah.
It's like the most iconic thing of Cinderella. Yeah. And so she does that whole thing. And then they have the star is now taking the Tinkerbell's spot on the castle and does whole thing of and like taps the whole thing. And I'm just like, I was just offended that they would try to mimic some of these moments in a movie that it just wasn't that good. And this is not what I wanted for the 100th anniversary. I wanted to have something that was good. Mm-hmm. And I felt like this one was fine.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't terrible. It wasn't something that I'd be like, oh my gosh, the worst thing ever. But it also, on the way out of the movie, I was like, will I even remember this movie? And as we were getting in the car to record, I'm like going through the Wikipedia, like, this is okay. That's what happened. And I'm just like, no. And I was
already forgetting.
I'm already forgetting. And I have, okay, I was telling Morgan this. Marissa, my sister, she just will bring up movies, you know, because that's what she does. She watches movies all the time. And she decided to watch Home on the Range. I've seen this movie at least 3 times. And I cannot remember a single thing that happened in it. All I know is that Roseanne Barr is in it. And the CD.
Yeah.
Like, I know the soundtrack because it's actually a very good soundtrack.
Pretty decent, yeah.
But the rest of
Alan
the movie.
Alan Menken.
Yes, he did good. I like it. But it's like the rest of the movie, I cannot tell you what happened.
Yeah.
And then I felt like this movie would be that kind of level of storytelling where give me a week and I will not be able to tell you what happened.
We are back in the Disney lull that happened in the mid-aughts.
Yeah.
You know, we had Brother Bear, Home on the Range, Chicken Little, like those 3 duds in a row where it was just, wow, Disney has lost it. You know, so bad that Home on the Range was forever going to be the last Disney movie.
Yeah.
That, you know, we were ever going to see.
Well, it was during the time, the crisscross when DreamWorks started. And so it was
Shrekified.
Everything got Shrekified. And so I feel like that's kind of what's happened right now with,
There's a spider-versification of Disney or of the animation world. Because you see so many films trying to emulate kind of that style.
Mm-hmm.
So I just feel like I mentioned at the beginning, you know, with Lasseter gone and that kind of, with Lasseter gone, Disney's just lost their way.
Yeah.
Again. And this is not the first time, nor will it be the last, unfortunately, that this will happen to them.
I mean, was it really Lasseter, though, or was it just like all the things?
I mean, let's look at their last few films. Well, last one was Strange World.
Mm-hmm.
Not good.
Raya and the Last Dragon.
Raya. Just trying too much. Just it had potential, but was a dud.
Mm-hmm.
So boring. And then Encanto before that was great. And we've had 3 kind of duddish movies in a row, you know, and that's the hat trick that kind of, you can't trust Disney after a while when you, after maybe one can be a dud, but there's kind of a pattern happening here. And it's not with just Disney. It's with a lot of their properties.
Mm-hmm.
They've screwed the fans over with,
you mean not
Star
just animation.
Wars. Yeah.
But Disney,
Star Wars, their Marvel
group.
Yes. I feel like there's a lot of just mistrust in the brand. Mm-hmm. Just things aren't good anymore because it's been so commercialized.
Right.
So that's for another day.
Yeah. They've come in, they've bought up all these properties and they've killed them.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like a common thread.
Yeah.
I mean, they blue skied it.
Yeah. Oh. Rest in peace, blue sky.
Rest in peace.
You deserved better.
They really did. So all of that to be like, okay, what do you give this as far as a final ranking?
All right. I am going to give it 2 out of 5 stars.
Ooh, okay.
Maybe a 2.5.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't enjoy what I saw.
Yeah.
It was so fast. Boom, 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 boom. I didn't really get to know these characters on like a deep level. I didn't really understand these characters and what they didn't have. None of them, and mostly I'm just referring to the two, Asha and Magnifico. Like, I felt like they and the queen and maybe the best friend needed to be so developed and all had these, like, primary and secondary motivations for what led them. And, like, we got to see. The problem with, I think, modern filmmaking is that they don't give us those slow times to, like, just chill with a character and see who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Like in those first moments when we were introducing Asha, it should have been like
Puss in Boots did.
Well, yeah. But I think the problem was I was so distracted by her quirky adorkableness.
Yeah.
And it just like, what am I watching? That I didn't get to really know who she was and what made her tick and what made her, you know, be who she was and what were her driving factor. It was just like, I was thrown into this movie at this stupid song at the beginning, like introducing welcome to Duloc, you know, it was, it was bad. And they waste so much time on that, which doesn't matter at the end of it.
Yeah.
Because guess what? We already had the prologue that told us what happens in this place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do we have this? So, and then it's just rush, 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 pop, 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 and off we go. And so I'm giving it 2 out of 5 stars, which is terrible.
It is.
Yeah. For a review. For me. Yeah. I tend to, like, you know, do the high school grade up sort of thing.
Right.
I'm not terribly too mean, but watching this, I'm not grading on a curve for Disney. I'm not saying I expect more from Disney. I do expect more from Disney, but just, it wasn't a good movie. I never need to see this again.
Yeah.
And the music, we didn't even talk. We talked about the music, but like,
Julia Michaels.
Yeah. She's kind of like a pop, you know, contemporary sort of songwriter. And it feels that way. It feels like they were trying to be Hamilton at certain points. It felt like they were trying to be like top 40 radio sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And it didn't work for me. It didn't feel like a classic sort of song. It felt like we'd listen to these probably in 10 years and be like, oof, mm-hmm. that was a song from, some of them even felt like Taylor Swiftish, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they should have hired Taylor Swift to do, like, that. See, would be significantly
that
better.
That would have been something, at least that would have like made it feel like all the songs were in line with each other.
Yeah. So that's what I got.
I'm going to give this 2.5 stars.
Okay, okay.
If I take away my expectations for Disney, then it goes up to 2.5.
Yeah.
With my expectations, it would drop it down to like a 2, maybe lower.
Yeah, yeah.
But all in all, like as we were leaving, they always ask us like what our reviews are.
Yeah. The press, the guy who does or girl who does the screening, they get your thoughts so they can send the initial thoughts back to the studio before the
so the reviews. Studio knows what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
And like we come out and we're just like, yeah, we don't really like it.
And yeah, then, in a nutshell, that's basically what we said to them.
And then the guy behind us is like, oh no, I loved it. I really enjoyed myself. And we're just like, oh God.
Like, am I out okay. of touch?
Yeah.
No, it's the children who are wrong.
Right, I know.
But I don't think that's the case.
I don't think so.
We're a Principal Skinner in this situation.
No.
I think it's just simply...
Because I'm looking at like, these are actual flaws in story writing.
No, these aren't things that we are like, being super nitpicky about. These are just, you know, I will say with the art style, I'll give it to them that they tried.
They did.
They tried something different. They tried something new.
They tried to have like a multi-plane camera effect in certain times.
I noticed that as well, which is very reminiscent of older Disney films and really cool, really iconic to Disney. I appreciated that they attempted something different than the traditional. I mean, there's these AI-generated movie posters of just like everything now, like if Harry Potter was a Disney movie, if the Bible characters were a Disney movie, and they're just like so generically Disney Pixar.
Yeah.
It's sad, you know, but they've kind of have this big doe-eye characters in CGI that it's just doesn't feel fresh anymore.
Mm-hmm.
This was different, but it just didn't. In the execution, it was still flawed for me because it was so jarring to look at. There are certain times where I'm like, my eyes are having a hard time with what's happening here, especially with the character that's so erratic and jib-jabbing around.
Yeah, yeah. And like, you know, the squash and stretch was in all the wrong places.
Yeah.
So it goes back to 2.5 stars for me. We did not talk about the final credits.
Okay, so they have a final credits scene, as my kids call them, a little one.
Like
they
a
always
movie.
They always want to wait around see if there's a little one at the end, which is funny. But during the credits leading up to the final, there is a post credit scene. Mm-hmm. In case that's the proper term for it.
Yeah.
Post credit scene at the end, all the way to the very very end.
Mm-hmm.
But as that's happening and they're scrolling through everyone who's involved. They basically have like these little drawings of one character from each Disney animated film, starting with Snow White. And they come on the screen and it's in gold. It's kind of like an outline. Oh, speaking of like outline, there were scenes that she has this like little notebook. She's like an artist kind of, and she does a little like flipbook animation. Mm-hmm. And I think that was obviously a nod to Disney. And, you know, some of these... She drew a picture of her and her dad sitting on the tree, and it looked like very storyboard-esque.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. Those scenes and images looked, to me, better than the film did.
Mm.
Like, just the simplicity of the 2D line and style. Like, I saw that, and I was like, oh.
I missed.
I like this a lot. And then they go back. Anyways, So they show all of these characters, and it was just weird because, yes, we all, if you're in the know, you know that this is the 100th anniversary of Disney Company, and that this is like the big culmination of
it. But they didn't really make that connection with the end of the movie.
No, they didn't at all. Like, and so then it's like, wait, so why is Rafiki here? Like,
right?
Why? What? Chicken Little? And it's weird because they cut some movies out, like Meet the Robinson.
Yeah.
I don't know if someone in post-production or just someone forgot. Just like thought that was Pixar or something, but like,
because they can't tell,
like,
these
the
things.
Winnie the Pooh, like the 2011 Winnie the Pooh, like they go, and this is a fun thing if you're an animation addict and a Disney fan, as it's appearing, try to guess the next movie that will, because it'll appear, it'll hold for 5 seconds and it scrolls up and then another one appears. And so that's how you can test how on top of your Disney canon you are, is if you can properly guess I'm a little rusty, but I basically got pretty.
You did. You did.
But, hey, let me tell you, I would have smoked anyone in that in that theater for sure.
Job,
I would have been able to get, you know, I got more than anyone, and I was the only one playing this game. But anyway, it's a fun game to play. You should do it.
It is. And then at the very, very end, the post credit scene, they have her grandpa, who's 100 years old. Okay, that's why he's 100 years old. Got it. Okay.
I see what you did there. Yeah.
So he's 100 years old, and his whole wish was to be able to play the guitar and write something that would be able to affect
everyone.
And so he writes apparently he's the writer of When You Wish Upon a Star.
Yeah, we should have looked to see if Jiminy Cricket was hanging out nearby and listened to it, you know? And and that connects, all the Disney movies are connected.
They're all connected.
And so that moment, his wish is the one that really sets her off, because they're in this, you know, they have this duet about the wishes, the king and Asha, and she sees her grandpa's wish, and she kind of gets that, and he didn't even react. I kind of was expecting the king to, like,
don't touch that,
like to give her like the side eye of like, no, you're not supposed to single out the wishes, you know. And she just like runs to this wish, and he's like in La La Land singing a song and looking at the sky, and, you know, and then she realizes, wow, you wanted to be great, you wanted to inspire people to do good or something. It was like something generic, but he had a guitar the whole time,
right?
And he was like, oh, I can't grant that wish, it's too generic, it's not clear enough, like, what if he wants to start a revolution,
right?
Which ultimately ends up happening, but it was silly. So she cared too much. That's our title. All right, guys, that's all we have for this episode of the Animation Addicts Podcast. Let us know your thoughts on this movie. I'm really interested to see how this will do. It's not trending very well for box office, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. And as far as the return of the Animation Addicts Podcast, we are back. We'll be doing more episodes. We're going to be doing a lot more sort of discussion, nerdy couch discussion style episodes. We'll be doing movies here and there when we feel inclined. You know, definitely there's other films that we want to review. I want to go back and do a Mario movie. I think we should do Spider-Verse 2 before Spider-Verse 3 comes out, which is in March. So it's just a few months from now.
Trolls. I got some NSYNC drama I want to dish out.
Basically, we want to do Trolls just so we can like bash on NSYNC, and specifically Justin Timberlake and how he's ruining all of our millennial dreams but not bringing them back for real.
Get
ready for that one. I've seen it and Chelsea has not, so she needs to get on that. And
We'll talk about Taylor Swift too at some point, because
we did see the Eras Tour movie, because, you know,
we finally got out of our houses and went to see a movie together after like a year.
It's been a while. Yeah.
But on that one, we'll talk more about like just where we, like what our year has been like.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also like the future of theaters, because aside from us just getting out of our houses, we were able to just kind of see how that one movie is. I see very big things and different things coming to theaters,
not animated but still applicable to the industry.
So and then you had this Pencils and Pixels.
Pencils versus Pixels is Tom Bancroft's basically documentary that's talking about the duality that's happened in the animation industry with traditional animation and CGI animation. So we have the screener for that and we'll check that out. And we love the Bancroft brothers, so happy to support them. And just all, even if they weren't involved, happy to dig into 2D animation.
Yeah.
And I think that will prompt our other discussion, or maybe in that movie, we'll talk about the Jennifer Lee 2D.
Yeah, yeah.
As I call it, her anti-2D propaganda. So lots of good things coming. I'm excited to be back. I think this will be really fun. So,
and we're coming up on our 300th episode this year.
Wow. Not 300 this year, but this year will be
this 300th. Year. Yeah. we'll finally hit 300 after
pretty awesome.
12 years.
Yeah, it's been awesome. Yeah. Well, I mean, we really had a slow burn because we were releasing every 2 weeks for basically the first, 8 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Now we sped it up, but hey.
But yeah, 12 years. We're going
12 years of podcasting.
Season 12 of podcasting.
Haven't given it up. Yeah.
We're still, you can't get rid of us entirely.
No. So we love you guys. We will be back. Be sure to subscribe. And until next time,
we are the Rotoscopers.
Well, how about that, Mr. Daddy Mustafa? I mean, it says it's going, so we're good.
Hello, hello, hello. Testing, testing. How are my levels?
You look great.
How do I sound?
No, the levels look good. They look like they're... Let me see. Maybe I need to go up a little bit more for mine. Or maybe I just need to eat the mic better. Yeah.
Yeah, how close do I need to be to this?
I know. I think you're good.
Okay.
It's been long enough that we have to remember how we do stuff.
How do you record? Do not put that in. I'm sorry. Take it. Okay. I don't know what I was talking about. I'm the worst. This has never happened in over nearly 300 episodes. Okay? I've been a lady this whole time.
You had me fooled.
Okay, what was I saying?